This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
This is World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris. Are you someone who prefers to work alone, or do you find you flourish with a team? Even if you believe that you fall into the former category, today's session might convince you to give a little more teamwork a shot. Up to this point in her career, Sarah Jarosz has been more of a solitary songwriter. Coming up, she'll talk about why she was so protective of her craft and why she decided to open up to more collaboration for her new album, Polaroid Lovers. The album was produced by Daniel Tashian, who's worked with artists like Kacey Musgraves, and it sees Sarah exploring new, rockier sonic territory. But just because she's trying out new things doesn't mean she's left behind the instrument she's called her musical soulmate. You'll find out what that is, and we'll talk about the record coming up. But first, a live performance of the lead single from Polaroid Lovers, recorded live for the World Cafe. It's Jealous Moon by Sarah Jarosz.
Wonder.
Jealous Moon, live for the World Cafe. That's Sarah Jarosz. That's from her new album, Polaroid Lovers. Sarah's here with me, Raina Duris, to talk about that album today. Sarah, welcome back to the World Cafe.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back.
The song we just heard, Jealous Moon, that is how the album starts. It's gentle for a second, and then guitar, drums, might not be exactly what people are expecting from a Sarah Jarosz album. Talk about why you chose to start the album that way.
Yeah, there was kind of no other way to start the album. I realized when we had all the songs together that I just wanted to make my intentions known. And Daniel Tashin, who produced the record, he was like encouraging me just to come out of the gate, you know, and say like, why would you hold back? And that was a lot of the intention behind this record, was making musical choices that I've wanted to make and kind of maybe have held back in the past and dipped my toes into certain sonic things before and just like fully jumping into the pool this time. And so I think that song is maybe the best example of that. Yeah, it's just like, here we go. I'm here. Let's do this.
And so we should talk about Daniel Tashin, because he's worked with people like Casey Musgraves and Leon Bridges. Why was he the right person for this project?
Yeah, so I kind of made the decision in spring of 2022, I guess, coming out of the pandemic, after having a lot of time to be in my own head writing-wise, that I wanted to reach out to other writers in Nashville, which I had just moved to in 2020. And Daniel was the first person that I met up with to write with. And we wrote Take the High Road. And there was just this magical kind of spark that happened where it was like, I felt that that song laid the path for the album. I knew, I kind of had the vision of like, okay, this is what it can be. And Daniel and I just really hit it off creatively. And so it started as a writing, you know, sort of friendship. And then I was like, okay, now I think I want you to produce the record. So it went in that order, and we wrote a ton over the course of 2022. And then he wound up producing.
We're actually going to hear Take the High Road. That's the next song we're going to hear you play. Is there anything else you want to tell us about Take the High Road before we hear your performance?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I sort of think of this song as the thesis statement of the record. You know, it's kind of, there's the line, I'm tired of being quiet, time to face up to the fear. And it's kind of a journey of self-discovery, I feel like the lyrics of this song are, and sort of being confident in yourself, believing in yourself, and knowing that you can stand up for yourself. And that's what the lyrics mean to me. And so it's beautiful the way that it unfolded, and like I said, laid the groundwork for the rest of the record.
Is that a thing that you've had a hard time doing, standing up for yourself, believing in yourself?
No. I mean, I've had incredible mentors, and I do feel like I've always believed in myself, but it's natural in life to go through ebbs and flows. So I think, you know, there'll be dips and there'll be times when I'm like, okay, I'm doing good. And there's another song on the record, Good at What I Do, that kind of questions that. And I think, you know, it's just a natural human emotion to question these things sometimes. And so I kind of wanted to put that vulnerability in these lyrics, because to me, that's how I can sort of connect to the listener, and that we all feel these things, and it's just a really human experience.
Yeah, next time you're going through one of those dips, you can put this song on. It's Take the High Road, Sarah Jarosz on World Cafe.
While the snow was coming in, but I woke up in this valley, pulled my collar to the wind. I saw the chance to catch a ride with a fair weather friend, but I never met a shortcut, wasn't longer in the Take the high road over the mountain pass. Take the high road Take the high road, baby.
Performed live for the World Cafe, you just heard Take the High Road from Sarah Jarosz. She's my guest today. I'm Raina Duris. Sarah's new album is called Polaroid Lovers. So earlier we were talking about working with producer and co-writer Daniel Tashian, and I found this quote from Daniel. He said to the New York Times, "I never heard her play or sing a single wrong note in the entire recording of this album. I have a feeling that was because she was really prepared." What is your preparation process before you walk into the studio? Oh, and also you can say, did you ever play a wrong note the entire
time? I'm sure I did. Well, you know, I do actually feel like I was more prepared for this album than previous ones, in the sense that I had so much time on the front. I dedicated so much time on the front end to the songwriting process. I think in the past, I've either, you know, on the record that I made with John Leventhal, we were recording the album while we were writing. And so those things were happening simultaneously. And then on my first four albums, I was still in school. So I would just, you know, timing wise, I was like, here's the 10 songs. That's it. Let's do this. And so this time I purposefully was like, you know what? I'm going to take the time to just not rush into the studio and try to have more than enough songs ahead of time, so that when we finally did get into the studio, I felt like, all right, I fully believe in every word of this record, and let's do this.
I'm always so interested in people's prep process before we go in, because as you can see here, I've got like a billion notes, right? But I spent all this time prepping because when I walk into the studio with somebody, I know that it's there and it lets you be freer. Like, what do you get out of being ultra prepped like that?
Exactly that. Just there's more space to sort of be yourself and I think to be more vulnerable, actually. I think that's something that I've thought a lot about with this record, is sometimes you're being a public-facing person, you try to hide your vulnerability, and I think I'm working on just having that be a part of it. It's not hiding it is more human, and so I think, but the preparation allows for that to sort of be more comfortable and not like a crippling kind of way. So I felt more emotionally open in the actual tracking process. Like a song, Columbus in 89th, for instance. I think it was the first time I was actually moved to tears in the studio, kind of getting into the headspace.
Hold that thought, yeah, because I want to talk about that a little bit later. But let me quickly reintroduce you right now, just in case you're just tuning in. I'm speaking with Sarah DeRose today on World Cafe. We'll come back to that song. I want to talk about more collaborators. Aside from Daniel, you have many collaborators on this album. You've got Natalie Hemby co-wrote with you, Rustin Kelly co-wrote with you. We were going to get to another person who co-wrote with you in a second. And you've co-written with people before, but in the past, you've mostly tended to write alone. It's one thing to try co-writing. It's another thing to fully embrace co-writing. Why did you decide to do that on this album?
Yeah, so part of it was moving to Nashville, you know, and finally, I've spent so much time in Nashville over the years. I recorded my first four albums there. But, you know, there's something about moving to a place and living there. I think there was extra incentive for me to kind of reach out to people in the community that I respect and admire and have wanted, sort of like had on the horizon. I would love to work with them at some point. So moving to Nashville was part of that incentive. But I would say the biggest thing was just time and, you know, feeling more comfortable in terms of my musical voice and what I can bring to the table in a room with another writer. I think I was very hesitant to explore that when I was 17 making my first record.
Sure.
Because I was still finding my own voice, you know. I was so young that I was concerned that if I sat in the room with someone else, that maybe their vibe or their voice would take over and I would kind of get lost at sea.
Yeah.
If I did that too much. And so I am really grateful for that. Looking back, I'm glad that I kind of found my own thing on my own. But now it's to the point where I see no downside to collaborating and just being creatively influenced by these other people who are in my community. And, you know, I think working with Aoife and Sarah in I'm With Her was a part of that. Like, we have such a special collaborative vibe and making music with them is so special that I sort of wanted to explore that similar energy with my own record.
I want to talk about the collaboration we're going to hear you next, because the next song we're going to hear you perform is it's a fun country song that you co-wrote with John Randall, who's worked with artists like Emmylou Harris, written songs for Brad Paisley and Miranda Lambert. What did you learn working with a mainstream country songwriter like John?
John Randall is the best. We really Well, we share our Texan roots. So I actually have told John this, but he reminds me so much of my uncle, which is hilarious. So when we were together, I feel like I'm with family.
And that's awesome if you're in the studio. Yeah.
100%. And it just, yeah, it creates this open dialogue, very comforting kind of vibe.
And it seems like it would be really fun to play.
Oh, well, that actually was part of the energy going into that write that day was, you know, in my live show, I often turn to cover songs to get energy or kind of more raucousness.
Sure.
Or kind of major sounding. A lot of my early songs are very modal and kind of moody and melancholy. And I was like, what if I just try to, instead of having to turn to a cover song to get that energy in my live show, what if I just try to write a song that will be fun to play live, which is something that I never really did before, that song. And so it is proving to be that. It's very fun to play for audiences.
Well, here it is, live for the World Cafe. It's Sarah Giroux's Runaway Train. You are listening to The World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris, joined by Sarah Giroux today. You just heard her performing her song Runaway Train from her new album Jealous Moon. In that song, and on a lot of the songs on this album, you play the octave mandolin. Now, for folks who might not know what that is, I actually was surprised how much it kind of looks like a guitar, but slightly different. Could you describe the octave mandolin for us?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. It's become my soulmate of an instrument. I really just gravitate to it so much these days. It is an octave lower than a mandolin. So for anyone who doesn't know, I started on the mandolin. Yeah.
And you were pretty young.
I was almost 10.
Yeah.
And mandolin was really my way into just being completely obsessed with music and knowing that it's what I wanted to do. But when I started writing songs in my teens, I would often turn to the guitar to do that. And anything I wrote on the mandolin seemed to be instrumental because it kind of, something about the range of the instrument seemed like it was in the same space as my voice.
Interesting.
And I have to credit Tim O'Brien because on a lot of the Tim O'Brien records that I listened to in my teenage years, he would play the octave mandolin. Some people call it the bouzouki. They kind of go hand in hand. I say octave mandolin because mine is always tuned an octave lower than a mandolin. Bouzoukis sometimes have different tunings.
Okay.
I got one. It's built by a guy named Fletcher Brock. It was at a trade show that I went to when I was 16 years old. And I had been saving up money and looking for something like it. And it was like the sky opened up and I played it for 5 minutes and it was just magic. I mean, I can't describe it any other way. I immediately started songs were just like pouring out of me. And I think it was kind of the combination of it being closer in range to guitar, but I could take all of the skills that I had on mandolin and do that.
Isn't that amazing how a different instrument can change the kinds of songs that you're writing? And I think if you're playing a trumpet versus a piano versus a guitar, yeah, sure, you're going to play different songs, but two instruments that seem sort of similar can be so different with what you come out with.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's something, that instrument is important to this record because it's something that allowed, while I was exploring these different sounds, like on Jealous Moon or Runaway Train, when I was playing octave mandolin, I felt like, okay, this is me. This is still me. And as long as I was, that instrument is sort of the through line of the album to make it still feel like I could be myself while exploring new things.
I'm speaking with Sarah Jarosz today on World Cafe. Her new album is called Polaroid Lovers. We are gonna close out with Columbus and 89th. It takes us to New York, where you used to live, and you still get emotional, I know, when you play it. What is it about this song and looking back at that time and that place that hits you that way?
Yeah, well, you know, this is an example of when a song is almost a form of therapy. You know, I think that when writing a song is a form of therapy, I think I hadn't fully processed the emotions of having to leave New York so quickly at the beginning of the pandemic. And, you know, when I left, I didn't think I was moving. I just thought I was going away for a few weeks. You know, and I'm obviously so fortunate that I had another place to go, and Nashville is wonderful, and that's part of the song, is like the silver linings, the complicated nature of change. You know, there can be goodness that comes with change, but there's sorrow as well. And so, yeah, when I didn't write this song until almost 2 years after that happened, and it was like it broke something open where it was like, wow, almost more than moving from New York, it kind of signified maybe a closing of a chapter of youth, and kind of turning the page towards full-on adulthood. And, you know, moving to Nashville, I got married, I lived with my husband. So a lot of change happened in those 2 years. But what's been so beautiful about it actually being out is that it isn't just my story. So many people can relate to that, you know, when you have to change something in your life that's out of your control, and you just have to kind of figure it out and go with it.
It's a beautiful song. We're going to hear you play it now, performed live for the World Cafe. Sarah Jarosz, Columbus and 89th.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone, that you'll recognize the real thing when it comes along. You can only see as far as the crow flies. Sometimes love leaves you tongue-tied. Once in a while,
Columbus in 89th, performed live by Sarah Jarosz. Sarah's new album is called Polaroid Lovers. She's been my guest today on World Cafe. Sarah, it's been so great to have you. Thank you so much for taking the time and for playing with us and talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Come back anytime.
I will.
I'm Raina Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.